Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, April 5th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I'm Broadway Star's James Marino.
Broadway Radio has a whole lot of exciting news coming up over the next month, so make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Broadway Radio. We've got a number of major announcements coming, so join us on social media and be the first to find out exactly what James and I are cooking up.
All right, Matt, Sunset Boulevard just opened up in London, so why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, Glenn Close is returning to the role of Norma Desmond, which she originated on Broadway in 1994 for a limited run with the English National Opera. Close has said that she hopes that this scaled-back concert production finally leads to a big-screen adaptation of Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical. Directed by Lonnie Price, the show opened last night, and don't tell Patti LuPone, but Close is getting rave reviews. The Guardian's Michael Billington noted that the scaled-down version actually accentuates the darkness of the story, which stays fairly faithful to the original Billy Wilder movie. But he did say that the production's chief pleasure is Close's performance. He said her big achievement is to treat the character not as a grotesque harpy, but as a real woman who lives in a remembered past. Holly Williams of UK's What's on Stage said, Close gives a performance that shades and shimmers like one of sequined gowns. Grandly majestic, her mouth set in a ferocious, resolute little line, then giddy with girlish, gleeful, grotesque excitement. But when the fear takes hold, she's suddenly needy and manipulative. That's pretty poetic stuff there. Finally, Rod McPhee of London's Mirror wrote, though it's been 21 years since she last played Norma, she effortlessly inhabits the character and remind us why she's been nominated for 6 Oscars. And we may know her as an acclaimed actress, but Glenn's singing is just as stunning. You know, the praise has been pretty much for her acting, saying that even though she doesn't have the voice that she did when she originally did it on Broadway, it's still perfectly fits with her performance in the character. So it sounds like even though this is only running for just over about a month, month and a half, this is a pretty impressive production across the pond.
You know, I think that what had happened was it originally opened in London with Patty and then came to New York and Glenn took over the role. I think that's what happened.
Yeah, that's
so maybe
correct.
Maybe with Glenn doing this in London, maybe Patty can get the last laugh because, you know, if you've watched Patty over the last couple of years, she's become Norma Desmond.
So I am not endorsing that comment in any way, shape, or form, Miss LuPone. That was all James Marino. Send all hate mail to james@broadwayradio.com.
Not in a hateful way. Haters going to hate. But I think that Patty would be great in this role. You know, especially if people took photographs.
Well, I think based on the chapter in her memoir about Andrew Lloyd Webber and this whole fiasco, I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, if haters can hate, dreamers can dream. So maybe someday.
All right. Monday is the money day on Broadway, and they released the grosses yesterday. So tell us about the grosses. How'd we do this week?
Well, if you just looked at all the red on the grosses sheet, you would think that it was a fairly tough week for Broadway box offices. But coming off of a spring break Easter holiday, it actually was a pretty strong week, with Broadway's 36 shows averaging over $831,000 apiece. Obviously, a number of hit shows keep that average propped up for some of the lesser grossing ones. But both the Lion King and Wicked again crossed the $2 million mark last week, this time without the holiday ninth performance. And again, Lion King topped the list with $2,289,548, while Hamilton only took in, and I use the word only with air quotes, only took in $1,822,000. It did again lead in terms of the percentage of gross potential, pulling in 136.5% of its potential. That factors in, you know, premium ticket sales and standing room only and whatever mumbo jumbo. But, you know, anytime you pull in 136% of what you can achieve, that's pretty impressive. On the other hand, Tuck Everlasting stumbled a bit out of the gate in its first four performances, only bringing in $263,000. And both Disaster and The Father are really struggling, with Disaster pulling in only $379,000 and The Father down at $214,000. So hopefully those turn around quickly. We talked about Disaster's kind of social media video campaign. So hopefully that pulls it up a little bit here in the coming weeks. In total, 9 shows saw grosses over $1 million last week, with Fiddler on the Roof, Finding Neverland, and Something Rotten all really close to breaking that $1 million mark.
Tuck Everlasting, you know, 263,000 in four performances, you know, we're talking about 600,000 and change a performance. I think that that's fine. And I don't know if they have a really high running cost. Are there any big stars in that show that we think would command a huge salary?
There's a lot of Broadway stars. I mean, Andrew Keenan Bulger, Carolee Carmello, Terrence Mann.
But they're Michael not, Paltz. You know, Glenn Close type of salaries.
Correct. You know, if you look at the, you know, the show itself, the pictures that we've seen, it doesn't look like a really electronic set. It doesn't look like something that's going to require a lot of money. But when it comes to the actual numbers themselves, it wasn't all that strong, even just for four performances. I'm pulling up the list now. When you look at it, it actually only pulled in about 50% of its gross potential in those four performances. So that's really where it starts to get wonky, where, yeah, it was only four performances, but when you're only getting half of the total money you can, even though it was just your first four performances, it does start to throw up some red flags. So hopefully, as it gets to a full week, as the word of mouth starts to spread, because like we said, it does have a really impressive cast of Broadway stalwarts who are really great on stage. So hopefully that starts to pick up, and not only do their grosses go up, but that percentage of gross potential, which is really the thing that you want to keep your eye on in terms of how well a show is doing, hopefully that goes up as well.
And that $1.8 million for Hamilton, you know, did we talk about it yesterday, or was it the end of last week when the article in the Post about Hamilton breaking even?
Yeah, it was yesterday we talked about it, because it came out over the weekend that Hamilton is rumored to have already recouped. When you're pulling it, that the way you recoup this quickly is by having 136.5% of your gross potential on a weekly basis. So, you know, right now Hamilton is just a license to print money, which I guess is appropriate considering Alexander Hamilton is on money, but they really can do no wrong, whether it's at the box office or, you know, with the cast recording or with the book that's coming out. It's all greenbacks right now for Lin and his crew.
You know who wants to print cash?
Go ahead and tell me.
Finding Neverland wants to print some cash by bringing Kudish in.
It is.
Kudish cash.
Broadway.com is reporting that Tony nominee Mark Kudish will be taking over the roles of Charles Frohman and Captain Hook in Finding Neverland a week from today. So that hasn't been confirmed by any other sources, but it is out there. So hopefully we see Kudish back on stage. He was last on Broadway in Hand to God last season, and earlier this fall as well, and into January. So anytime he's on a Broadway stage, that's a good thing.
I didn't have such a great time at Finding Neverland, but with Kudish back there, I might go back and buy a ticket.
Wow, that's tough. I mean, when you get to see shows for free and you don't like it the first time, to go and buy a ticket is saying something about how much you like Kudish.
I love Kudish. All right, what's up with encores? Just on the success of the 1776, do I hear a waltz? I hear an awesome cast?
You do hear an awesome cast. Like you said, 1776 with Santino Fontana et al. Was pretty much sold out, and that ended its run on Sunday. So on Monday, they announced their casting for their next concert production, and that is Richard Rodgers and Stephen Sondheim's Do I Hear a Waltz. Tony nominee Melissa Errico will be playing Leona Samish, Claiborne Elder will play Eddie Yeager, and Hand to God, we just mentioned it with Kudish. Tony nominee Sarah Stiles will play Giovanna. The musical is going to run from May 11th through May 15th, and is going to be directed by Evan Cabinet and choreographed by Chase Brock. If you don't know this show, it follows Melissa Errico's character Leona, who is a middle-class American woman who uses up her meager savings on a long-dreamed-of trip to Venice, where she finds love, life, and her truest self. What's always fascinated me about this show is that Stephen Sondheim was kind of filling the Oscar Hammerstein role, who was his mentor, was his surrogate father, and did a show with Richard Rodgers. It didn't have a whole lot of success, but you can kind of see the blending of those two eras in musical theater history coming together in this show. So that's always a fascinating thing, and a great one for City Center Encores to take on.
I tell you, get your tickets. It's going to be a hard one to get, just like 1776 was.
Yep.
But so we have an open call for The Lion. Do you think I should do that?
Even though you don't really resemble Benjamin Scheuer, you would be eligible to take part in this open call. Last year, Scheuer won a Drama Desk Award for his one-man musical, The Lion. He both performed it and he wrote it, and it is autobiographical. He's been doing this role both in New York and around the country since 2014 and is currently on a nationwide tour. However, he announced that he will be playing his last performance next February at the Geffen Playhouse in LA, but the tour will continue. So producers have announced that they will be accepting electronic submissions for singers and guitar players at thelioncasting@gmail.com. And what's cool about it is that Scheuer said that while the show is obviously very personal to him, the next Ben can be any age, any gender, any race. And so that's really, really interesting. And I wonder how that's going to play differently with someone who maybe doesn't look anything like Ben playing the role. The production has made the sheet music for the audition song available, along with Ben doing some instructional videos of the guitar and vocals as well. So when we're talking about, you know, colorblind casting and genderblind casting, there's no better way to do that than taking an autobiographical show and casting someone who looks nothing like the actual person that the show is based on.
If I were to do this, it would have to be guitar playing blind casting. I don't really play guitar.
I think that's one of the requirements for this show, James.
Oh, but I'm an excellent synchronized swimmer, so I can do that. I don't really swim. So Carl Reiner, all kinds of love. What is he up to? He's still chugging them out, isn't he?
Well, this is All Kinds of Love was a 1993 novel that Carl Reiner wrote, and the comedy legend, icon, you can't say too many good things about Carl Reiner, but he tweeted yesterday that book is going to be adapted into a musical. I haven't read the book, but I immediately added it to my list as soon as I read the description, which reads, "In All Kinds of Love, an eccentric tale of unconventional love, Fred and Sharon Cox are each separately having an affair with their alluring Japanese tutor while their son is plotting to run away with one of the twin Salvadorian housekeepers." So knowing that Carl Reiner wrote it, and with that description, there is no way that this is not going to be a ton of fun. So I'm looking forward to finding out what creatives are attached in and where we are in the life cycle of this, and hopefully we'll see it on stage soon.
I'm seeing Nathan Lane as one of the Salvadorian housekeepers.
Well, it has to be twins, so you got to find someone else that looks like Nathan Lane.
I was going to say Nathan Lane, but it would make everything Tony so white. So
there you go. Good transition. A week or so ago, James, we talked about a Deadline column from Jeremy Gerard and Jordan Roth, where they talked about all the different kinds of diversity in this spring's Broadway season. And while we like to think of theater as being, you know, one of the most accepting communities out there, yesterday, Forbes's Lee Seymour published a study in an article that showed that the Tonys were pretty much just as white as the Oscars, which, based on the difficulty they've had this year, isn't a good thing. The study showed that combined, the Oscars and Tonys have nominated 95% of their people were 95% of their nominees were white, with the Tonys recognizing people of color less than 1% more than the Oscars. The major difference comes between the two, where the Tonys has recognized twice as many black artists, but the Oscars has recognized three times as many Asians and Latinos. The article goes on, and Seymour really breaks down the numbers and kind of makes allowances for how for the 20 years that the Oscars were running before the Tonys, and then tries to correct for different statistical anomalies. And if you're into kind of the data and analytics side of trends, and especially in theater, this is a great article. He does obviously note that with Hamilton and The Color Purple and Eclipsed and more shows this season featuring and created by people of color, that hopefully we can start to see those percentages begin the long road to evening out after this June's Tonys.
Sure. You know, it would be interesting to see how the rest of the nation accepts the onslaught of Hamilton. And we'll see if also that plays into maybe the overflow of November's election here in the United States.
Anything to help that would be good.
So before we wrap up, I want to mention a few things that Matt and I can recommend. Ken Davenport's The Producer's Perspective podcast. Ken Davenport writes his blog, The Producer's Perspective, and it's a daily blog about what it is to produce on Broadway, and it's very, very interesting. I read it every day, and he started a podcast a little bit more than a year ago, and he's on podcast episode number 66, came out today, or yesterday, actually, and It's with Broadway press agent and Tony Award honoree Adrian Brian Brown from the press rep's office, Bon O'Brien Brown. They represent many Broadway shows.
Yes, they do.
It's very, very interesting. If you have any interest in the business behind the business, take a listen to this, and they talk about how you should get a word out of a show. And Matt and I were talking about this just yesterday about how Broadway shows are putting up their own YouTube channels and launching podcasts and Instagram and Twitter feeds and things like that. This just expands deeply upon that, as Adrian has been a press rep for some 20 some odd years or more, actually. And it's very, very interesting. So if this is something that you think you might be interested in, get over to theproducersperspective.com and take a listen to it. And we also in social media, this word social I couldn't think of, Amy Schumer's Hamilton parody, Betsy Ross, is out there. And we will put a link to that in the show notes. And it's very, very funny. If you're an Amy Schumer fan, check it out and take a listen to that. So, Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow Broadway Radio on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me, Matt Timonini, on Twitter at BWWMatt. And subscribe to my pop culture podcast, Some Like It Pop, on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And I am James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for listening to us, and we will see you tomorrow.